We are back with episode 278 of the Flip Empire Show, and this is Alex Pardo.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's going on? What's going on, my friends? Hope you're doing amazing wherever you're listening to this. I appreciate you hopping on once again. And guys, this is part two of me speaking to Steve Cavanaugh's Southern Maryland Real Estate Investors Association, his RIA out there in Maryland. This was right around the time of Thanksgiving a couple of months ago, and I just actually finished spending, my wife and I spent 3 days with Steve and his wife and his family, in his house in West Palm Beach. We had an amazing time. And so I thought it'd be a great opportunity to kind of share part one, which was episode 276. If you did not get an opportunity to listen to that, I want to definitely encourage you to do that. Go to flipempire.com/episode276. And then this is part two. So we did a Facebook Live, and because it was around the time of Thanksgiving, instead of Steve traveling to Maryland to put on and host his Southern Maryland RIA, he had me on, and I was a guest, and I was really appreciative for the opportunity. And in part one, if you didn't get an opportunity to listen to it, Steve asked me a lot of diverse questions I've never been asked before, such as, how to start and launch a podcast, a story of how I launched the Flip Empire Show, what new behaviors, beliefs, patterns, or habits I've recently adopted, what was my favorite failure, what pivotal belief has positively impacted my real estate business, and my answer is going to surprise most of you, my thoughts on the real estate market, my thoughts on the word hustle. So kind of a different type of, speaking engagement or podcast that I've done before. So definitely check out part one, guys. In part two, we're going to talk about, my journey through EOS and the impact it's had on my business. We talk about giving and service. I'm actually going with Steve and a few other people, like a handful of other people. We're going to Guatemala in a couple of weeks, and we're going to be spending 5 days out there doing some mission work. So I'm really excited about that. We talk about the Holiday Mastermind and how that came together, how I was able to check off different areas of my personal life vision through the Holiday Mastermind and the impact that's had. And then he asked me a bunch of rapid fire questions like my superpower, who I aspired to emulate, tips for avoiding procrastination, where I see myself in 10 years. And then we get into the weeds with, people were asking questions on the Facebook Live as far as wholesaling on market versus off market. What areas do I decide to target and how do I go about that process? Investing in your backyard versus virtual investing, best strategies to acquire, bank owned or auction properties. And, how do I determine what your superpower is or unique ability. So again, really, really cool. It was a very fun Facebook Live I did with Steve. It was very well received. And so I just wanted to kind of republish that as a podcast here, share it with you, because even if you kind of know my story, if you've listened to a lot of the shows, there's a lot of questions I've never been asked, and some of the answers might actually surprise you. So guys, without further ado, let's hop into episode 278. This is part two with my buddy Steve Cavanaugh, me speaking to the Southern Maryland Real Estate Investors Association, his RIA out there, via Facebook Live. So love you guys, appreciate you, and I hope you enjoy it.
Alex, I want to transition a little bit here, and we'll zigzag. You have a heart for service.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that we really initially connected was when you invited me to your first Holiday Mastermind that you did last year. And of course, we had connected at a mastermind before that in Life and Air. But that was when, I really got to kind of see your heart for service, and you got to see mine. And we got to actually do a little bit of work together down in the Keys after the Hurricane Irma last year. And that was very rewarding and fulfilling all the way around. And through the course of that, you had brought a real estate investing billionaire to that meeting for us all to meet, and some others like Mark Evans, a very successful investor out there. And just a great event, just a first class event that Alex put together. But You run the Holiday Mastermind with Eric Stark, and now I've participated in the last two masterminds, and I have to say it's been very, very good events that you put on. What do you have to say about, you know, the service and your heart for service? And of course, you're going to Guatemala with me in February as well, which will be awesome.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about any of that stuff? And maybe if you want to plug Holiday Mastermind real quick.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, it's I get a lot of fulfillment out of service. It's kind of selfish, honestly, if I think about it, because I get so much pleasure and enjoyment out of putting a smile on somebody's face and knowing that I have had some sort of direct or indirect positive impact on that person's life. And I feel very fortunate, grateful, and blessed that I didn't grow up with a silver spoon in my mouth, but I also didn't have to live under a bridge, and I didn't have to jump around from home. Like, I had a loving home. My parents, you know, provided a lot for us. And so I feel grateful, and I feel almost obligated to pay that forward and help other people that are not as fortunate as I was. And so, I don't know, man, this was probably going back 15 years or so that I kind of felt God tapping me on my shoulder saying, you know, you can do more, you can give more. And kind of just, you know, when you feel a nudge, you know, for me, it's God. For some people, it could be the universe. It could be some sort of higher power. I think you got to listen to that. Mm-hmm. Listen to your gut. Yeah, listen to your intuition. And that's when I got involved with service on a yearly basis. And so, you know, going back to 2000, maybe 11, 12, Eric Stark and I had connected. And then we started doing local, you know, feed the homeless around the holidays every year. And when Hurricane Irma hit, you know, Eric and I hopped on the phone and we said, man, how can we make an impact on these people's lives? And we had the idea to essentially, you know, put a bunch of successful real estate investors in a room, mastermind, and donate 100% of the proceeds to charity. And that's how Holiday Mastermind was born. So we did the first one, you know, about a year ago, and then we had our second one in Bimini, you know, back in July, which you and your family were a part of, and we're extremely grateful for that. And it's something we're going to do now on a yearly basis. Mm-hmm. So
it's great, man. I love it. I love it. And I love serving with you, and Guatemala is going to be awesome in February. Thank you for agreeing to come on that trip.
Thank you, man.
Let me hit you with a few rapid fires. We're clocking in about an hour, and we're almost 30 strong here. So folks are enjoying this. Let me hit you with a few rapid fire. Then folks have typed in a number of questions that they want to hear the answer to. So, all right. So let me hit you with a few rapid fires. Ready? What books have changed your life?
All right.
What books would you recommend?
The One Thing by Gary Keller. The classics, Think and Grow Rich, The E-Myth, The 4-Hour Work Week, and The Pumpkin Plan.
Okay. Who do you despise? Sorry. Start over again.
No problem.
What is your superpower?
You know, I didn't realize this until about a year and a half, 2 years ago, but I'm a natural connector. I think I'm really good at building genuine relationships with people and then just kind of being a connector.
I'd agree with that. Yeah. I don't think it's your only superpower.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
Who do you aspire to emulate?
God? I don't know that I have a better answer. God. I mean, you know, it's like the what would I used to always wear this band that said, "What would Jesus do?" And I fail on a daily basis. And sometimes I don't even think about it, you know. But I think character can be defined by what you do when nobody's looking, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, man, I mean, who would I emulate? I'd have a hard time thinking of one specific person because I emulate a lot of you. I want to emulate a lot of what you and several other people in my inner circle. So I don't know. That'd probably be my best answer. So,
okay. Thank you. Let's see, man. The questions are really flying in now. But Carl does want if you could go slow on the books, please just list them off slowly.
Oh yeah. The One Thing by Gary Keller. Mm-hmm. The Pumpkin Plan. Mm-hmm. Okay. The E-Myth by Michael Gerber, The 4-Hour Work Week, and Think and Grow Rich was the first personal development book. And that was what planted that seed that, you know, kind of started it off for me.
I know you said.
And obviously Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Okay. I know that you said that you've taken a bit of a break on reading, but what book are you reading right now, or what was the last book that you read?
I'll share it with you right now. So these are the two books.
Profit First. Cool. That's so on my
this
shelf.
One, I'm in the middle.
Nice.
I'm in the middle of this one. And then a buddy of mine, Michael Jake, I recently started building a rental portfolio. He highly, highly recommended this book. I usually don't read real estate books. Mm-hmm. My books are more about marketing, business, and personal development. Mm-hmm. But he highly recommended this one, so I just picked this one up.
Okay. It looks like Fareed has asked, which books do you read over and over? So have you read any books multiple times that you'd recommend?
Yeah, the Bible. Think and Grow Rich, I have read probably 4 or 5 times. And the 4-Hour Work Week, every now and then. It's been a couple of years since I read that one, but I've probably read that one 3 times.
Yeah, those are a few of my rereads right there. And it's the funny thing, when you talk about rereads, a lot of people say Think and Grow Rich. Let me see if I can ask you. I don't want to get lost in the weeds on this question, Alex. I know we've been over an hour now, but how do you cue your work? Are there any tips for getting work done, avoiding procrastination, anything like that?
Yeah, I think it starts with kind of preparing your day in advance. So, I'm usually out of the office by 4 o'clock. And so I get to the office at 8:30, 9 o'clock. I'm out by 4. Before I leave the office, I plan my day the next day so that, when I walk into the office, or if I work from home, or if I go to Starbucks, or if I'm traveling, I know exactly what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And what I would say is, so for me, I have a simple Google Doc system. It's nothing fancy, nothing sexy at all. And I have my to-dos on there. I try to limit my to-dos to 3 to 5 things. And I look at all of my to-dos and I say, okay, if I can only accomplish these 1, 2, or 3 things today, I'd feel like it was a success. Do that first, because I think we generally tend to procrastinate on the things we need to do that we know we need to do. But sometimes for me, I'll do things that I can knock out quickly, but I'll do a bunch of those things. And then all of a sudden, it's 1, 2 o'clock and I haven't done the big things. So what's that saying? But eat the frog first in the morning.
Yeah.
In other words, do that thing that you got to do, get that out of the way, and then move on with the rest of your day.
Yeah, I love it. Robert Allen calls it fear things first. Usually the thing.
What's it called? What is it again?
He calls it doing your feared things first, because what happens is the things that we fear, we tend to procrastinate over and over again until they grow into these real big things in our minds. And then we finally do it weeks later. And it's like, oh, that's all it was. So if you do those things that you fear, it's usually the thing that you need to do.
I'll tell you what, one of the things that can help you if you're if you're just a procrastinator by nature is join some sort of accountability group or get an accountability buddy. Mm-hmm. And so when I wanted to get involved in the information marketing space back in 2009, I paid a substantial amount of money to a well-known info marketer. And I came up with a plan and he said, okay, well, what's going to happen if you don't implement this plan? You paid me a bunch of money. What's going to happen? And I couldn't think of anything. So he said, okay, take out your checkbook. This was back in 2009 when I was writing more checks. And he said, write my name on there and put $10,000, drop it in the mail and post date it for whatever I had to implement. I forget what it was. And I was like, you're kidding me, right? And he goes, no, this was the first thing he told me to do, to write him an additional check for 10 grand. And so I did that. And that was the only accountability I needed. I got it done. What I'm saying? And he would have cashed it, by the way. He totally would have cashed it.
Yeah. Man, that's great. That's motivation right there, huh? Man, one of the things, Alex, you've brought up paying mentors or third parties or vendors now 3 or 4 times for this conversation. So if anybody is out there and you're pinching pennies trying to make this happen, I mean, this is proof positive for having a mentor. I've had a mentor my entire career and have paid a mentor my entire career. And obviously I've seen the results through my students, so I believe in mentorship. I believe in paying to be a part of a mastermind group, all that stuff. Obviously you can't be a part of all of them, but you have to be selective who you choose to work with. But, it can definitely pay dividends. Mm-hmm. Alex, one more question from me real quick for you. Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Steve, you know, I typically don't look that far out. I typically try to keep it within, because in my mind, 10 years is like, it's a world away, but I'm fooling myself because 10 years goes like that. Right. And so I try to typically think 2 to 5 years out. You know, when Robert Kiyosaki's second book, which is called The Cash Flow Quadrant. So if you haven't read Rich Dad Poor Dad, read that, then read The Cash Flow Quadrant. It talks about the employee, the self-employed person, the business owner, and the investor, right? I see myself more transitioned into the investor category from a business perspective. Mm-hmm. This year, I've gotten involved in more private lending. And so eventually, I think I want to invest in other people's businesses. I want to be more of a passive investor versus an actual day-to-day operator. Mm-hmm. Through EOS, one of my hires, hopefully in 2019, is going to be an implementer, which is a fancy word for a COO. Somebody to essentially handle the day-to-day operations of the business. Even though the business runs without me, I'm still connected to it. And so I want to put a COO in place to completely remove me from that process so I can just kind of be, you know, 30,000 foot view instead of jumping into the weeds every now and then.
Yeah. Gotcha. Great. Good stuff, man. Eric Kometsky, Eric Stark, thanks for joining us. Let me scroll back.
My man.
Through, we have a number of questions here, some of which you may have covered, but I'm going to go ahead and just read them and we'll go through. We want to make sure we get everybody taken care of. We're at 31 viewers now, still strong, man. So everybody likes this stuff that you're talking about, Alex. Let's see. If I'm reading this right, sorry if I mispronounced your name. Linata says, with the market being so hot, is it a good time to wholesale? It seems like there are so many of us looking at the same properties. Struggling to get a wholesale deal, what advice can you give?
Great question. It's no matter what the market does, it's always a good time to wholesale. Wholesaling is one of those strategies that I think needs to be in every investor's toolbox. It's almost, to me, maybe I'm a little biased, Steve, but I look at it as the foundation. Mm-hmm. The barriers to entry are low because you don't need money, you don't need experience, you don't need your own money. So there's so many resources out there. There's so much content that you don't necessarily have to pay a mentor to learn the business. You can learn it on your own. As far as deals out there, you know, there's so many different ways to start in wholesaling. One of the things you can do is just start building a buyer's list. An easy way to build a buyer's list is, you know, you can put out bandit signs in your local area. Be careful with the sign police, but there's, you know, you could post ads on Craigslist. I mean, there's so many things you can do that are simple. They just require some time. And, you know, a lot of it doesn't require a lot of money. Start building a buyer's list and then essentially offer those buyers other people's deals. I would network with the wholesalers in your market that are really moving deals, the ones that control their own deals. And, you know, network with them. Ask them, say, hey, if I can find you a buyer for your property, what can we work out? For a lot of people, that's an easy way to get started. It's just start building a buyer's list and start connecting and adding value by selling them other people's deals. Eventually, I think you're going to want to control your own inventory and you want to do your own marketing for deals. But that's one quick, easy way that most people can get started. I mean, if you were to like take away everything I had and drop me in some random market, I would probably just start. I just start doing things. I'd put out signs. I'd get a list. I'd buy a list. I'd get phone numbers and I'd start pick up the phone and just start calling people. You know, action rewards people. You know what I mean? And so whatever that might be, pick one or two strategies max and just focus on that. I think what happens to a lot of people is they want to do direct mail and then they want to do Facebook and then they want to do bandit signs and they want to do this and that. And so they just kind of scratch the surface of all these different marketing channels versus just going really, really deep. You know, so an inch wide and a mile deep tends to be my approach, especially if you're getting started in the business.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, you know, it seems to me, maybe Linata, you can let us know, but it seems to me like you're kind of referring more to maybe listed properties where everybody's looking at the same ones. That definitely is the case. I mean, that's going to be area specific, but I can tell you in Southern Maryland, up until about a year ago, you still were able to buy stuff off the MLS. It has, and don't get me wrong, you still can today. It's just extremely competitive. Now that the market is turning a little bit, I don't know that that's necessarily going to be continue to be the case. But to Alex's point, you need to pick something where you're really hustling after some off-market properties. You know, I know my acquisitions guy, Mac, is on this call tonight. He's been doing some really cool stuff lately that I can't talk about on the call. But let me just say that the guy's putting a lot of grit out there. And I think these days, if you're going to be going the low-cost, no-cost methods, it's going to take some grit. You're going to have to get out there and maybe knock on doors. You're going to have to do bandit signs. You're going to have to do some of that stuff that is like, you know, you know, some of that sort of stuff. So, but the bottom line is that I think the deals, the better deals, at least for us anyway, these days are off market. Not to keep anybody from going out there and making offers on listed stuff because you never know. So anyway, let's see. Next question from Kim. She says, how do you decide on what areas to target, or is that mainly based on where cash buyers are buying? Now, that's the first part of the question. I do want to add a question in here, Alex, because this is going to inevitably pops up when I'm talking about wholesaling to somebody. A lot of people have to be virtual real wholesalers, and you have stayed in Miami, where you're from, where you live, where you operate out of. Why not virtual wholesaling for you as a second part to that question?
Yeah, I don't, my opinion, for whatever it's worth, I don't think there's a right or wrong. I just think if you're getting started in this business, unless you live in some like small town with like less than 1,000 people, you know, somewhere in like Idaho or something, why not focus on your backyard? You're already there. You know, you have your boots on the ground, i.e. yourself. It's a little more complicated when you do virtual wholesaling because, you know, typically you have to like then hire someone. You know, if I had to hire somebody when I was first getting started, that would be enough to just hold me back from doing something. And so it's always easier, I think, in my opinion, to just start where you are, learn your market, network with people. You know, I don't attend RIAs anymore, although I did attend one recently. But when you're first getting started, just network, just get out there. It's just so much easier when you're doing that in your local market versus trying to do everything, you know, online, trying to build a team in a different market. It's not to say you can't do it. You absolutely can. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I recently started buying rental properties in Cleveland. And so you can invest virtually 100%. The internet and the phone gives you the ability to do that. Mm-hmm. But I just think it's so much easier when you're in your backyard. And what was the other question?
Part of that question, Steve? Kim's question was, how do you decide what areas to target? And is that mainly based on where cash buyers are buying?
Yeah, so there's several ways you can approach it, but I think she hit the nail on the head. I would start with, I have a free resource. It's a video on my page, Steve, if you want to share it with people. I can just send you the video so you don't have to take people to the site. But essentially, it's a 10-minute video on how to go to ListSource and figure out where all the cash buyer activity is happening and start all your marketing in those areas where you know people are already buying properties cash. And so I think she hit the nail on the head. I mean, that's definitely one way to do it.
Great. Alex, if you don't mind, once this is posted to the page, if you can just put a link to that in the comments section, then folks can go find that special report or video. Thank you. Let's see. Cindy's got a question. Cindy says, what is the best strategy to win a bank-owned auction property?
I don't know that I'm the best person to, we've done bank owned, we've done a lot of REOs. Matter of fact, 2003, probably 80% of my business, Steve, was REOs and auction properties, mm-hmm. but it's probably been a good two and a half years until we do it. So what worked for us at that time is I had a dedicated acquisition manager mm-hmm. that all she did was build relationships with agents, REO agents, and submit offers on auction properties. And so she had certain strategies where she would wait until like the last 60 seconds of the auction. She would kind of see where it was and she would slightly increase the bid. And there's different things like that. But honestly, for us, what worked was just persistent. Like I had a dedicated person that's all they did was REO properties and auction properties. I think the people that kind of, you know, don't see traction on that side of the business is when they dabble. They log in, they submit some offers, but there's no consistency to it. I think for me, it was just having a dedicated person that was just on it 24/7.
Yeah, I completely agree as far as that's concerned. I was going to totally say that. you know, a few thoughts come to mind. One is we had Chris Goldie speak at the Southern Maryland Real Estate Investor Group many years ago. This is when the tide of foreclosures was at its peak. And he was one of the probably is still the top REO agent, or at one point was the top REO agent in Southern Maryland. And someone asked him from the audience, "Hey, Chris, how do I win a highest and best scenario?" Because everybody was offering and getting in a highest and best scenario. And his reply is very simple. He said, "Be the highest and be the best." So, you know, that's the truth, you know, as far as a competitive auction or a multiple offer scenario goes. Now, as far as practical in this day and age, I think to Alex's point, the lazy folks who will only log in and bid once are probably not going to win too many auctions, because the auctions are very confusing and they're very cumbersome. Yeah. And they're very trifling these days. What they're doing is they'll list a property for a week. There may be somebody who wins, but then it's subject to seller approval. In other words, it didn't meet their hidden reserve or something like that. A lot of times the reserve is just too high, even when they publish the reserve, that it doesn't make sense to buy it at that. So then they'll stick it on the MLS for a couple of weeks. Well, then when it doesn't sell, then they restart an auction. And eventually, after they do several iterations of this or some similar process, it will eventually come down to the price, and then you end up seeing it rehabbed, come back on the market when you're looking at your listings every day. And it's like, oh man, you mean to tell me I could have bought that property for that price? Shoot, well, if I knew that I could have done that, then I would have done that. And it's only the people who are really going deep, to Alex's earlier point, really going deep on that one acquisition method, that are getting the bulk of those deals. So I think that's the best strategy, Cindy. You've got to just lock yourself down at whatever auction site, and there's a handful of them, Auction and Exome.com and some of the other ones that we use regularly. But you got to just become intimately familiar with their auction schedule, and you have to learn the idiosyncrasies that are a part of each of those sites and follow them. So, okay, a good discussion there. Let's see. Farid would like to hear more nuts and bolts about how to do a deal or how his first few deals were accomplished. So you don't have to really get into the weeds, Alex, too much on that, but maybe just give us kind of an overview of that process.
Of my first few deals, or is he asking more of a general question of how to do deals?
Well, we can ask him, Farid, if you would not mind typing in a little bit more what you mean. But in the interest of time, I mean, if you want to maybe just give us an idea how your first few deals were put together as far as the actual nuts and bolts. So he's probably talking about stuff like contracts, title companies, getting everybody to settlement, keeping the buyers away from the seller, stuff like that.
So, dude, my first deal, which is the one that I partnered with Ray on, was a short sale. It was a short sale that we wholesaled. And so that's not most people's typical first deal.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's crazy. I mean, talk to Ray about that deal. We have so many stories on that one deal. But, yeah, we were collecting paperwork. So I was trying to learn how to wholesale while at the same time dealing with a bank and a loss mitigation department. Wow. Putting a short sale package together. I mean, so the cool thing about that is that once we got that deal done, I thought most deals, that's the way you did them, because, you know, that was my first deal. And then I quickly learned that wholesaling is a lot less complicated than my first deal. But here's what I would say is keep it simple. You know, so we use, at the time I was using a one page purchase and sale contract, a one page assignment. Keep the paperwork very simple. Now what we use, just because I think it makes buyers and sellers feel more comfortable, is a state approved, you know, FARBAR contract. So whatever your realtors association approves, learn the language, because sometimes people are going to ask you that. I think once you feel comfortable with the paperwork, for a lot of newbies, paperwork tends to hold them back. Keep it very simple. Yeah. You know, if that's you, just use a simple one page purchase and sale contract that you don't have to be in real estate to understand that. And honestly, like, so for me, I brought Ray into that deal because I had a lot of fear associated with doing my first deal. Like, I was jumping in, I started mailing. So if that's you, get somebody to help you. If you find a deal, the money will come, the partners will come. And I kind of just failed forward. Like, I bumped my head and I made a bunch of mistakes, but at the end of the day, we still made 44, 45 grand on that deal, making every mistake in the book. And so I don't know how deep we want to go on, like, how I actually put the deal together. But essentially I got help, and I got help from somebody who had already done a handful of deals at that point. And I learned the business on the fly. I really did.
Okay, great. I think that's good. If he pops back on with some more clarity on his question, then perhaps we can go a little bit farther into the weeds on
okay.
that. Clifton Holmes has a question. Clifton wants to know, what would be your strategy if you didn't have any money and had to start over in a new area?
Dialing and knocking. That's exactly what I would do. So if you pick me up and drop me in any market, I'm confident that within 60 days, I do my first deal. And I do that by either just grit, getting out there, and like, that's a time to hustle,
yeah.
right? So like we talked about, how do I feel about hustle? If you took away everything I have, all my resources, and you just dropped me in some random market, I would network with people that I knew were doing the business. So I would associate with those people right off the bat, and I'd go pick up the phone and start calling sellers. I'd figure out. Things you can do for free. You know, it just requires some creativity. One of the things that I've really been kind of preaching on the podcast, Steve, is leverage your resources, leverage your network. You don't have to do everything yourself. So how can we do less by tapping into other people's resources? So who out there in that market has the MLS access, or who has a list of people, but they just don't know how to market? I know how to market, right? How can I do the sweat equity for 50% of the deal? Just provide me with the resources and let me get to work. So get creative, figure out what's your unique ability, figure out what you're really, really good at, and how can you partner with people that bring something to the table that either you don't have that skill set or you just don't like it. I don't know if that answers the question, but.
I love it. No, that's great. I would add that one of the things I would do is hop in the car. I would drive neighborhoods, drive. And you're not necessarily looking, when you're in a brand new market, you're not necessarily looking for distressed houses, although that's important and you want to keep a list of those too. You're looking for the ones that are actually being rehabbed. And then either get out and go talk to anybody who's there to try to find out who the owner is and see if you can call them. Otherwise, really what I'd like to do is go home and do the research. What did they buy that property for? Because really in order to analyze any given market, you need to find out three data points. You need to find out, number one, what are homes being bought for by cash buyers or by investors who are rehabbing in those areas? Number two, you need to find out what those properties are being sold for. Then number three, you need to find out what the cost of labor and materials are in that market. Then you can analyze where you need to be, whether you are wholesaling or rehabbing in that market. And a lot of people would say, oh, well, I don't want to be in a market where there's competition like that. I want to be somewhere. No. That's where you want to be. You want to be right in the middle of all the activity. You want to insert yourself 100%. Into a market that's healthy. So if you're driving around and you don't see any rehabbing going on, that might not be a good sign for you. So, okay.
One more thing, Steve. Oh, can you hear me? One more thing I want to throw in. Talk to people. So anyone you come in contact with is either a real estate buyer, a real estate seller, a private lender, or knows one of the above. So just anybody you come in contact with, tell them what you do, tell them what you're looking for, and how you can add value. Is that Carrie back there?
It is. He says,
okay.
Hi, Alex. She says, hi, Alex.
What's up, Carrie? So anybody you come in contact with is a buyer, a seller, a lender, or know somebody above. So tell them what you do, talk to people, and ask for referrals, ask for business. And if you're consistent with that, yeah. So
I love that. Let's see. Carl says, when speaking to someone who works full time and is just starting, what's your advice on how to schedule the little time that's available? So this would be somebody who maybe has a day
job.
So
that's a time to hustle. So like, let's say I had a 9-to-5 job and I worked 9-to-5 and I had a family with kids. I'd go back, I'd hang out with my family, I'd have dinner, hang out with the kids. When I put the kids to bed, I would put in time from 8 to 12, right? So I would essentially put in that time that I wouldn't be able to during the day. I teach myself. I think the biggest investment, you know, people watching can make is in themselves. So educate yourself first, but make sure that education is not an excuse to not take action. You got to educate yourself, But the quickest way you're going to learn is actually going out there and doing it. So if I had a 9 to 5, I'd work my 9 to 5. I'd squeeze in lunch hours. I'd squeeze in breaks, and I would learn the business, and I would learn it by making calls. You know, whenever you drive around and you see bandit signs, I'd pick up the phone and talk to those people because they're either wholesalers or buyers. Anybody I'd come in contact with, I'd ask them, do you know somebody looking to buy, sell, or even lend on real estate? I would just do it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have a sexy formula or answer. Yeah. I think for me, it comes easy because I would just do it, you know?
Love it. Love it. Fareed replied here. Let's see. One deal streamlined from acquiring the contract, a favorite template for it, which you already talked about. Just use the state association of realtor contract, and then it's easy and it's done. To using the title company and other team members to accomplish your deals. Fareed, I would just tell you this. Go to your local RIA. And if that's in Southern Maryland or if it's in the D.C. Baltimore area, please come see us on the third Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m. at the Custom Kitchen Baths by Design in La Plata. And you will meet title companies. You'll meet attorneys. And they will all work with investors, know what investors do, know what a wholesale deal is, know what an assignment is, know how to help you get those deals done. It's really as simple as you getting the seller to sign a contract at the price you need to buy it at or contract it at, and then handing it off to the title company. They will do the rest. Alex, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean, wholesaling is very simple. You find a property below market value, you tie it up with one piece of paper, you find somebody else willing to pay you a little more, you have them sign an assignment contract, you give it to the title company, and you make a spread. I mean, that's, you know, there's some more moving parts, but that's a simplified version of what it is. I mean, it's, don't overcomplicate it. I think you'll just kind of learn by just doing it, you know?
Okay, Kim typed in the books for you. Thank you, Kim. That's awesome. Let's see. Oh, Fareed says, look, it's okay. He gave a good answer. Good, good, good. Awesome. Oh, this is a good question. And I hope that we're coming to the end of the questions here, but I hope I'm not keeping you up too late here, Alex, but I've got a couple more to go. How do you determine what you're really good at? That's a really good question. How do you determine what you're really good at? Carl wants to know.
So I have an answer for you. So there's a guy out there by the name of Dan Sullivan from a company called Strategic Coach. And he talks about something called your unique genius zone. And Steve, you'll appreciate this because I learned about this through a mutual friend, Sean McCloskey. Mm-hmm. And so Sean and I, this was probably a good year and a half ago, we were on a call, and Sean and I were talking about that, hey man, I don't know what I'm really, really good at. Like, I feel like I'm pretty good at a bunch of things, but like, I was just having a hard time figuring out what my superpower was. And he told me about this exercise called the Unique Genius Zone. So if you guys just Google Dan Sullivan Unique Genius Zone, it's a simple exercise that I'll try to summarize in 30 seconds or less. You go out to about 15 to 20 people in your inner circle, family, friends, coworkers, associates, and you ask them, hey, what do you think, in your opinion, I'm really good at? Something that just comes natural to me. And when I went through this exercise, that's when I figured out that I was a natural connector, communicator. And that's when I figured out kind of my superpower, right? Which I had no, I just wasn't aware of that. And so for me, that's one exercise that you can quickly do within a week or two. You compile the data and you know, you might be surprised that, hey, I didn't even realize that I'm really good at that one thing. Mm-hmm. And then by the way, I think you need to double down on that one thing, whatever that is.
I love it. That's great. I've done that as well. Carl, I can send you the email format that I have used before if you want to shoot me an email and ask me about the Unique Genius Zone email, and I'll share that with you. Let's see. Fareed says, I see for sale by owners all the time, but it seems none of them look like rehabs. Do you have a comment?
None of them look like rehabs.
Yeah, I think what you...
Man, honestly, yeah. I...
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. So for me, sorry, man. So for me, even if it doesn't look like a rehab, just talk to the seller, talk to the owner and say, you know, have you considered selling your property by any chance? You can even phrase it in the negative, like you wouldn't be interested in receiving a cash offer, would you? Just talk to people. Even if it doesn't look like a rehab, don't overcomplicate it. Like, it's real estate. It's a house. You know, matter of fact, this year we've bought, I can think of, I don't know, 8-9 properties that we bought that wasn't a full rehab. The property was in decent shape. You know what I mean? So, man, if it's real estate and you're just get in front of the seller and talk, and if they're not looking to sell, let them know, hey, listen, you know, we'll pay a $2,500 referral fee if you tell us about the address of a vacant property or somebody that is interested in selling. If we end up buying that property, you know, we'll, and there's legal things you kind of have to be careful for there. But just generally speaking, just talk to people. I wouldn't overcomplicate it.
Yeah, that's great. And Fareed, I'll tell you, there's two types of properties. There's that. There's two types of distress, really. There's physical distress, and then there's this the emotional distress or the distress of the situation that's going on with the sale. So don't, just because you see a property that doesn't need rehab necessarily, it doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't a reason that somebody would need to sell that property.
Totally.
You know, medical bills, divorce, you know, somebody passed away, et cetera. You know, all the, in all these situations, and I could probably sit here and name off 20 more off the top of my head, but the bottom line is that these homes could be in very good shape. So I think that's a mistake that a lot of investors think. They oh, well, this house is too nice. It doesn't need any work. It's not physically distressed, so therefore there's no way that I could get a deal on it. That's not necessarily the case.
That's right, 100%.
Let's see. Cindy Mata says, thank you guys so much for offering a virtual meeting. Very much appreciated. Great content. Thank you, Cindy, for saying that. That's wonderful. Kim
thank
says,
you, Cindy. Thank you.
Kim says, agreed. This is awesome. Thanks for the info. Can't wait to come out to the Real Estate Investors Group in person next month. Kim will be there the third Tuesday of the month, and I am going to be actually speaking at that meeting, and the topic of my speech is going to be Shift Happens. So
I like that.
Let me see. Carl says, thank you so much for your time. I have two more questions for you before we end here. If anybody wants any final comments or questions answered by Alex, now would be the time to type those in the comment box here. We've just got a few more minutes with him tonight. Alex, what asks do you have of my audience?
I don't have an ask, Steve. Honestly, I don't. I just, hopefully there's something that I have shared today or something that you've shared that kind of strikes a chord, resonates with people. And so I guess the only ask I have is to do something with that information. You know, I talk on the podcast a lot about speed of implementation. I think for many people, that's the one thing that separates those who, you know, fail versus the ones that succeed. The quicker you can hear something and implement it, regardless of the outcome, the closer you're going to get to your success, whatever that may look like. So honestly, that's the only ask. You know, if anybody wants to check out the podcast, I guess that would be the only other one is, you know, you guys can go to flipempire.com. And I don't sell anything on the podcast. It's just straight content. Two episodes get published a week. And that's it, man. I don't really have an ask.
Okay. How can people get in touch with you? Obviously, you have the podcast they can hear. Where are you at on the social media?
Yeah, so flipempire.com. There's a private Facebook group that's for the Flip Empire community. So there's a banner on the site. Or if you just go to flipempire.com/Facebook. And then if you just type in Alex Pardo on Facebook, Alex Pardo 25 on Instagram, you'll find me. Okay. I mean, I'm not active on a daily basis, but you'll be able to find me.
Okay, great. And I think that you're probably linked up here on the live. Yeah. So, all right. Clifton Holmes says, this was great. Thanks for all the value. Clifton, thank you so much for being a part of this tonight. Lisa Monk says, thank you. And Carl says, thank you so much for your time. Well, I want to thank all you all for
thank
your
you
time. You guys have been awesome for hanging in here. We've had a really good crowd for a pretty long time tonight. And Alex, thanks for going a little bit longer than I had promised to take you away from your family. But I do thank you very much, man. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, Alex. And happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there in the Southern Maryland Real Estate Investors community. I love doing these. And if you want me to do more of them, I'd love to do more of them. So thank you all for attending. Thank you so much, Alex. Happy Thanksgiving, man.
I love you, brother. Thank you for having me on, man, and giving me the opportunity to just kind of share my thoughts. Hopefully it helps some people listening. And, you know, anything I can do to add value, any questions you guys have, you guys can connect with me on Facebook. And, you know, I just appreciate it. Hope everybody has an awesome, awesome Thanksgiving. And Steve, I know you and I will see each other pretty soon here, buddy.
Yeah, man. Sounds good.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.